Do you think there are life and business lessons you can learn from a Navy captain? There probably are, especially if that captain is Brett Crozier. After a long naval career culminating in being the chief commanding officer of the aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt, Brett collected the wisdom he'd learned along the way into the book Surf When You Can, Lessons in Life, Loyalty, and Leadership from a Maverick Navy Captain. Here he is to share five surprising insights from the book.
Hi, I'm Brett Crozier, a former Navy captain and commanding officer of the aircraft carrier USS Theodore Roosevelt, USS Blue Ridge, and the F-18 Jet Squadron VFA 94. Now working as an executive in the nonprofit world, I'm excited to share my first book, Surf When You Can, Lessons in Life, Loyalty, and Leadership from a Maverick Navy Captain. In my 30 years in the Navy, I was fortunate to learn a bunch of cool stuff along the way. How to hover a helicopter, how to fly and land a jet on an aircraft carrier, how to take a nuclear reactor critical, how to drive large ships, and most importantly, how to follow and lead in the world's greatest Navy. I've learned many things over the years, but I want to share five key insights from my book, simple lessons that apply to anyone, even if you don't plan to hover, dogfight, or drive an aircraft carrier in your future. Insight number one, never turn down espresso. During my career, my family and I were stationed in Naples, Italy, a chaotic city that's often called a pretty lady with dirty feet. Professionally, my days in Naples were almost exclusively spent in an office doing staff work. It was not a welcome situation for a Navy fighter pilot fresh from a squadron tour, but I knew I could get the job done. You see, it's very easy for Americans to wear our work ethic as a badge of honor. We are tough, we work hard, and we work a lot. This was my personal bias as I walked into work that first day. I was part of a 12-nation NATO staff of just over 100 people whose goal was to coordinate military operations throughout the Mediterranean region. While I love coffee as much as the next person, the Italians, well, they really love their coffee and would stop whatever they were doing several times a day to venture out to a local cafe for an espresso. In their classic Italian way, they always invited everyone in the office to join them. Every day, a coworker and lieutenant colonel in the Italian army named Luigi would invite me to coffee. And every day, I politely refused, thinking that there was always too much work still to be done. Finally, one day, Luigi spoke up. "Chopper," he said in his broken English, using my call sign, "Americans think if you work hard that we're going to trust you. But what you really need to do is spend time with us outside of work so we can get to know you. Then we can trust you. That's the essence of trust." I considered Luigi's comments and realized he was probably right. Here we'd been working elbow to elbow for months, but I knew little about the people I was sharing space with, other than their professional duties and responsibilities. So I started going with Luigi and the others. 8 months later, NATO was called into action when Gaddafi mobilized his forces against his own people after they had organized a series of anti-government rallies in Benghazi, a city in northern Libya. As the protests intensified, Gaddafi began using lethal force against them. In a surprisingly swift fashion, the UN Security Council condemned his actions, and our NATO staff became a very busy place to work. But in those hectic, stressful moments, when there was a seemingly insurmountable amount of work to get done and lives on the line, the Europeans, who I had once criticized for always dashing off for an espresso, were right there beside me, working day and night. They refused to go home until I did, and they were never afraid of hard work. And through it all, we continued our espresso breaks. That experience reminded me to never turn down espresso, or more specifically, that life is about relationships. A team is stronger when the connection between its parts are stronger. That certainly proved true during my time in the Navy, and I believe it is true in life as well. Insight number two, pull like a Clydesdale. When I was the executive officer, or XO, the number two in charge of an aircraft carrier, I was fortunate to work closely with a senior chief who was the lead person in charge of the ship's damage control program. His responsibilities were many and included everything related to emergency services, fire prevention, firefighting, damage control, even things like chemical, biological, and radiological warfare defense. Senior had not only seen some stuff through his career, but he had risen through the ranks to the point where he was directly in charge of a team of 100 sailors and responsible for the firefighting training of all 5,000 sailors on board. He was an exceptionally quiet and matter-of-fact guy, So when he actually had something to say, my ears perked up, even when I wasn't sure if he was pulling my leg or not. "Hey, XO," he said one day as we sat in Damage Control Central, the room on a carrier that's used to monitor the entire status of the ship, including things like flooding, fire, list control, and nuclear reactor status. "How much weight do you think a Clydesdale can pull?" "I don't know, Senior," I replied. 5,000 pounds? "You're pretty close, sir," he said. "It's somewhere between 2,000 and 8,000, but no more than 8,000 pounds max. Now, how much weight can a team of two Clydesdales pull?" I wasn't sure what he was getting at, but I played along. "I'm going to go with somewhere between 4,000 and 16,000 pounds, but 16,000 tops," my math degree quickly helping out. "Wrong," he said. "When they work together, two Clydesdales can pull 24,000 pounds. And if properly trained, that goes up to 32,000 pounds. "The math doesn't work." "Sure it does, sir," he said. And with that, he stood up and walked away, leaving me to chew on that little nugget he had shared with me. The senior chief never spoke with me about it again, but the essence of his message was a reminder of what I had learned on the ball field as a kid and continued to relearn, whether airborne or at sea, throughout my career. We are stronger when we work together. Whether you're in the military or not, you can accomplish a lot more as part of a team. So always strive to pull like a Clydesdale. Being part of a team doesn't diminish our capabilities, it enhances them. And as a leader, strive to assemble a group of people who understand their collective goal, the importance of what they're doing, and each person's value to the organization, and there's no limit to what that team can accomplish. Insight number 3, focus on the closest alligator. In the world of Navy fighter pilots, where situations can change on a moment's notice, we've taken liberties with Covey's quote, "Keep the main thing," and modified it so it's a bit more relevant to our profession. Always focus on the alligator closest to the canoe. The assumption here is that any alligator near the canoe can be a life or death threat, but the closest one is your greatest priority at any given time. When flying, this means that if there are several things going on, and there are always several things going on during a flight, you start by prioritizing the closest and therefore biggest threat. For example, if I'm low on fuel and the only safe place to land is on an aircraft carrier, I tune out every other aspect of the mission to that point and focus on nothing but a smooth landing before running out of gas. This is especially important today, where life seems more fragmented than ever. In a world of lightning-fast communications, cell phones that never seem to leave our side, and astoundingly short attention spans, there is always someone or something trying to grab our attention. With so many choices and so many distractions, how do we get the job done? That's where alligators come into play. Focusing on the closest alligator is about learning how to prioritize and figuring out what's important in your life at any given moment. Of course, a big part of this is work. Whether you're employed by a large corporation, a small company, or even yourself, you're most effective and most valuable to your employer when you can see the big picture and address those tasks that are most vital at any given moment. Alligators certainly don't end there. Your personal life is about prioritizing as well. Any given weekend, you might feel like you've got 1,000 things to get done, from cleaning and laundry to seeing friends and family. If you're not careful and don't prioritize beforehand, you're likely to get to Monday morning and realize that while you were busy all weekend, you didn't actually accomplish anything. It's a subtle distinction, but an important one. The same principles can actually be applied to family life too. The stresses of work and professional responsibilities can be difficult for all of us, no matter what kind of job we have. As a Navy captain in charge of a $10 billion aircraft carrier, my responsibilities were often legion. There was always something else to take care of, always another call that needed to be made, always another email to respond to, no matter what time of the day or day of the week. If I wasn't careful, the job could easily have consumed me. Keeping the main thing, focusing on the closest alligator, in the end, they all sound a bit like glorified bumper stickers, but it's the execution that makes all the difference. Few of us will ever find ourselves defending a canoe from fearsome reptiles, flying combat missions in an F-18, or driving a 1,000-foot nuclear-powered ship through busy foreign waters. But that doesn't mean we can't learn to take a step back from the everyday noise of our lives and allow ourselves the opportunity to set our priorities for that day, week, month, or year, whether we're sitting at our desks at work or simply kicking back on a Friday night and deciding what the weekend holds. Insight number 4, play small ball. As a kid growing up in California, baseball was a big deal. We listened to it, we watched it, we talked about it, and we played it a lot. And while I never got good enough to play for my beloved San Francisco Giants, I did play in the Rincon Valley Little League Majors, which was the next best thing for a young kid at the time. The best team I ever played on as a kid was the Dragons, led by our larger-than-life coach Ray, who proved to be a memorable figure in my life, even though I was just a boy at 12 when I met him. A huge man who also happened to be a California Highway Patrol officer, Coach Ray was a stickler for the fundamentals. Under his guidance, I and all the other kids on the team mastered the foundational elements of the game, which we carried with us throughout our Little League careers. I remembered him hitting grounder after grounder after grounder to me at third base. A seemingly endless barrage of balls hit my general direction, all with a singular collective purpose, to reinforce the importance of learning how to do the little things right. I didn't know it at the time, but Coach Ray was teaching me the value of what baseball aficionados call small ball. In small ball, a team relies on the fundamentals to win games. On the offensive side, singles and walks are as valuable as extra base hits, and advancing runners through steals, bunts, hit and runs, and sacrifices is every bit as important as waiting for the long ball to clear the bases. In the field, teams that play small ball are defensive masters and rarely give their opponents the gift of free runs. Surprisingly, the same approach can be found in the Navy. In a military setting, training is as elemental as breathing. Your training dictates how efficiently your ship runs, how well your crew responds in critical situations, and how effectively you can face adversity. As an aircraft carrier pilot, small ball meant practicing our landings hundreds of times before we progressed to actually doing them on the deck of an aircraft carrier. We started in the simulator, then eventually graduated to actual runways where every landing was critiqued and graded. Only after we had expertly demonstrated our proficiency in the fundamentals were we allowed to graduate to the real deal and land on an aircraft carrier at sea. And even then, we were assessed every time we touched down. I may have risen to become the commanding officer and senior pilot on board the USS Theodore Roosevelt many years later, but every single time I flew in an F-18, my landings on the carrier were scrutinized for how well I performed the fundamentals of that basic yet unforgiving task. I've tried to take the value of small ball to heart in everything I've done, both in and out of the military. In combat, you cannot afford to lose. In the civilian world, the consequences may not be as dire, but the message is just the same. Master the fundamentals, and you'll find it much easier to navigate the path to success. Because in the end, we practice not until we get it right, but so we never get it wrong. So while on the inside you may just be a 12-year-old kid who's tired of fielding grounder after grounder after grounder, there's no arguing with the results. Doing the little things well and executing them perfectly is just as important. Small ball actually does win games, both on the field and in life. Insight number 5, surf when you can. A famous philosopher once said, "Life moves pretty fast. If you don't stop and look around once in a while, you could miss it." That, of course, was the legendary philosopher Ferris Bueller. If I had to guess, he'd say that surfing was one good way to slow down and look around. When I arrived at my first Navy squadron in Barbers Point, Hawaii, to join the HSL 37 Easy Riders Helicopter Squadron, we surfed as a squadron every Friday morning at the local break. Over the course of the tour, I found that for me, surfing represented balance, a conscious commitment to every aspect of my health and wellness, from the physical to the emotional to the spiritual. And believe it or not, it was because of this commitment to the things outside my work that I was able to thrive inside my work. As a Navy captain, I had the privilege of experiencing the ocean in all her moods. At times it was so calm we could carve slow circles in the water with the carrier and eventually catch up with the white and blue mosaic of the ship's wake before it faded into the depths below. At other times, the sea was an unforgiving bedfellow, with waves so massive they'd crashed over the flight deck 60 feet above the surface. Yet no matter what the sea threw at me over the course of those 30 years, I never stopped appreciating the perspective she offered, from my place on the bridge of the aircraft carrier, with the horizon stretching forever before me, I realized just how small I was in the world. I think that's why I became such a staunch defender of my personal time and so passionate about surfing or anything that lets me enjoy the ocean. You see, no matter where you dip your toes, surfing has a way of slowing you down. It's an opportunity to disconnect from all the parts of your life, the calls, the texts, the emails, the demands, the stress, and simply be on the water. For me, surfing represents pressing the pause button on everything else so I can stop, look around, and breathe. Striking a meaningful balance between work and life is a critical element in everyone's happiness, whether they're a leader or not. So whether your surfboard is a church, a set of golf clubs, a basketball, or a yoga mat, the message rings true all the same. Surf when you can. I guarantee you'll enjoy life more, and you'll likely be better at work as a result. Thanks for listening. I hope the surf and weather are great wherever you are.
Thank you, Brett. That was Brett Crozier with 5 big ideas from Surf When You Can, lessons in life, loyalty, and leadership from a Maverick Navy captain. For more insights from a military man, check out The Art of Clear Thinking, a stealth fighter pilot's timeless rules for making tough decisions by Hazard Lee. I'm Michael Kovnat. Thanks for listening.